Hello and welcome to Resync, an Assassin's Creed podcast. I'm your host, Landon, joined by my co-host once again and for all time, my buddy Lucas.
What's up,
Lucas?
What's up? How you doing?
I'm tired. But what else is new? I feel like that's how it's been every week.
Yeah, always tired.
Always tired. But in no small part due to Assassin's Creed, which I was trying to figure out how I wanted to frame that, because it's not a diss to Assassin's Creed, because I actually play it because, you know, again, we're on this new schedule now. We're a day earlier, but then that means that, like, I don't play it multiple days before now. Like, I played it last night, which is cool because then my recollection's better. Like, you know, like, that much better since I just played it. But I'm definitely gonna have to plan ahead in terms of like sequence 13 when I do that cleanup, right? For the 100%. So I'm definitely gonna have to grind multiple days for that. But, you know, I was having a lot of fun last night playing this new sequence where we are finally in Venice, and which is, in my opinion, I think it's the best location so far. Yeah.
I like it a lot. It's very pretty.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's the biggest city we've been in so far, and features a lot of different, you know, it's got the canals, and so you're constantly dealing with different types of water, which, I mean, we talked about last week about how cool it is to have a game in 2009 where you can just swim all over the place, and they just have these integrated water mechanics. Honestly, I feel like they looked at Venice and were like, we need to add this, or otherwise it's going to be a pain in the ass. I do feel like, because it's not really introduced as a concept until you get to Forli, which is right before Venice, and I feel like by the time they were working on Forli, they knew I feel like Venice was probably the first location they thought of for this game.
Probably,
it's, you know,
yeah.
It is the city, you know, yeah. So,
I love how, like, right before you go to Venice, they're like, here's how you use a boat. And then you go to Venice and it's like, there's boats everywhere.
Literally. So it's like, you know, you might need this. Might make your life easier. Which it does.
Yeah, it does. Because I definitely do get annoyed in Venice, though, when I have to navigate around these bridges or figure out how to, like, cross over the rooftop across the canal. Because the canals are intricately laid out.
Well, have you ever considered just getting good? I mean, you're supposed to be a parkour master.
It's fine. It's just I get lost sometimes because I'm like, well, I shouldn't have gone this way.
That's fair. Yeah, it is like learning a new, because, like, you know, especially like doing the 100%, I'm spending a lot of time in these cities, and so, like, I pretty much had Florence and Tuscany down, like, to a pat, like, just spending what, like, 5 sequences in them, you know, like, you know, they combined with the two. And so I had the city's layouts pretty much down. At the very least, Florence I had down to a pat. And so, yeah, now going to this new city, there is definitely a bit of a growing pains period of just kind of navigating. And again, I think I've only played through this section of Assassin's Creed 2 once. Like, I've played through the opening sequence, I don't know how many times, but I think I've only played through the full game once. Maybe twice, but I don't think so. So, you know, a lot of this, it's been like 10 years since I've played. So, just it is kind of rediscovering it. Like, I do forget a lot of the intricate plot details and gameplay mechanics, and I just keep getting wowed by how much, like, we're halfway through the game now. Like, we still got a whole nother half, and they just keep throwing new concepts, keep innovating on what's came before, just in the different ways they've improved. Because we also, and I mean, we'll get into the details of all this later, but, like, we have a full-on, like, Altair sequence in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Something I didn't think was a thing until Revelations. I completely
forgot about this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I completely forgot. And just looking at how they have bridged the first and the second game, like, because they very easily could have just had this be Ezio's adventure, have, like, the callback / loose connection to, you know, the first game through Desmond, right, in the present-day story. But, like, there's all these different connections to Altair in the first game, and, like, it kind of sucks now that, like, we have these just, like, one-game for each character, and it's kind of like their whole journey, and then they just move on. Yeah. And like the interconnectedness of the Assassin's Creed franchise is paper thin now, which, you know, like a lot of their interconnected stuff kind of fell apart. I understand why they wanted to just focus on the core gameplay. And, you know, to an extent, that is kind of what they need to do right now, because they are in a space where a lot of fans just have kind of moved on, and they need to get them back before really building anything else. And I feel that like that's what Shadows is set out to accomplish.
Yeah, and these early games really focused on the kind of the ancestry concept of it all.
Right.
So like the connections between Altair and Ezio are kind of because of their lineage, you know?
Right.
Because they're related, and they have, so it's like it's kind of their whole journey, like the family's journey almost.
Right. Yeah.
That's their focus for that.
That's fair. Which I mean, nowadays it's like Shadows is literally launching with the, like, you know, like the whole premise of like Assassin's Creed or the Animus hub is that anybody can access the Animus now and just access random people's memories. So that whole lineage aspect is kind of out the window now. So like,
I don't really care as much as connecting him, I feel like.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Well, I also feel like it is kind of like a desperation tactic, where it's like the more they try to connect these games, the more you are forcing gamers to play through hundreds, like at this point, probably thousands of hours into all the games before to try to understand it. Which, like, there is interconnected stuff. Like, there is, like, they have the storyline still going. It is still there. It's you know, like, mostly forgotten. But, like, they've actually done some pretty crazy stuff that a lot of people just aren't aware of, because they usually don't get that far into these games or pay that close attention to it. But to be fair, specifically in the last couple games, like Valhalla and Mirage, they've done some pretty, like, groundbreaking stuff with the present day. It's just by this point, most people don't care about it.
Because they fucked it up in 3.
Exactly. But anyway,
more on that later.
We'll get into the proper sequence here in a second, but just wanted to mention here real quick the trivia question for last week. Malarkey, you son of a bitch, you've done it again.
Yeah, you did.
So the trivia question was, what does Ezio first call Katarina upon meeting her? Malarkey correctly guessed Madonna, which is Italian for my lady, and also a famous pop singer that his family babysat for. Found out about this. That's pretty wild.
It is wild.
But yeah, so that is what he first calls her. Like I said, it's Italian for my lady, not all that, you know, surprising or whatever. You know, if you, I guess, had like Italian heritage, you might have been able to guess that on your own. But that is what he called her. Stay tuned. I think I got a pretty good stumper this time, because this week's trivia question is only if you're really going for like the everything stat, like getting everything you can out of this game. So,
and you have to do it right away.
Yep. It's kind of a blink and you'll miss it type thing, and it's actually really cool. I didn't actually tell you what it was.
Yeah, I missed it. I'm sad.
But I will after. It's really funny, and it's something that we'll get a good chuckle about next week when I reveal it. But sequence 7. So this is like the midway point, kind of sort of like, you know, after this, there's 14 sequences, this is 7 out of it. Again, we're in the second act of the game, we've got hit in the groove, but again, we're now introduced to this whole big city or whatever, but picking up where we left off, we're getting on the ship, and Leonardo tells Ezio that Katarina is actually the Duke of Milan's daughter and the Lord of Milan's wife. So she is a taken woman, but she sure as hell didn't act like that last sequence. So, you know.
No.
She wanted some, you know, she wanted some hidden blade, if you know what I'm saying. So, you know, like, who knows what's going on there. But basically, he's like, hey, you need to be chill. You need to not stick your dick in that, because that'll definitely get you in some trouble, even though you get into trouble anyway. Which Ezio doesn't really care. He's just like, that's my type of woman. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, you know.
Bang, bang.
Bang, bang, bang. And so then Rebecca rudely interrupts you guys' boy talk to pull you out of the animus. We're finally gotten out, you know, like it used to be every sequence we were getting pulled out of the animus. Now we made it through almost half the game.
Yeah.
Before she's like, all right. Basically saying that, you know, they don't want to get overwhelmed. She's modified the animus to help with longer sessions, but warns that prolonged exposure can result in a lot of different side effects.
Will fuck you up.
Basically going to make you batshit insane because you won't be able to tell your memories from your ancestors, yeah. And it's all going to blend together and everything. Which
is what happened to, what's his name?
Subject 16.
Yeah, I always forget.
But, so yeah, I mean, that's referencing that. And Lucy essentially beckons Desmond downstairs to test the bleeding effect results to see how much of Ezio's training he's sort of, like, sapped in as his own. But before you do that, you can have some conversations with people.
It has to be before.
It has to be before because, I mean, like I said, I played the first game, all right? I had all those conversations with Lucy, and so I knew. I remembered I was all up in that. And so I, you know, first I talked to Sean where Desmond asks him about Subject 16's hidden data, which is the, you know, the glyphs you're finding throughout the game, which Sean begrudgingly admits that he doesn't know what it is. But, you know, wishing that he could use the animus himself so that he can just get in and do it and figure it out himself.
He's such a dick.
But Lucy, he does say that, like, Lucy thinks it has something to do with the Codex, which a lot of the conversations did have to do with the Codex. The Codex does kind of seem to be, like, the driving theme of, you know, like, the first game is all about finding the pieces of Eden. Seems like the big driving thing for the second one is that Codex. And trying to find different stuff because he then, if you have another conversation with Sean, he starts talking about looking for the Codex pages in the present day, basically saying, like, he's potentially found traces in some museums or whatnot, but, like, it's all just kind of scattered to where he asks about, like, Desmond asks how it came to be in Italy and, you know, to which... You actually, like, I already knew the answer to this because if you play the auditory crypt side mission, it lays out all of it, like, in, like, different, like, these, like, stone tablets that are inscribed with the auditory family history. But Sean tells him some of the information, and I was a little disappointed that Desmond wasn't like, actually, I did this one thing where it's like, because technically they should already know all this stuff. But Sean tells Desmond that... Marco Polo gave them to Dante Alighieri in the 13th century, but the details are unknown. Except I know the details because I played that side mission, which Lucas hasn't yet, so we won't get into
it. I'm going to. Actually, this one I wanted to play for a while. I just haven't.
Yeah. Suck. But I know all the nitty-gritty details about how that went down, and like I said, I was a little disappointed that they didn't bring that up, because I'm like, I literally, like, the data is in the animus. Like, I played through that. You yeah. should know exactly where that came from.
It would be cool if it was one of those games I was like, ah, he got this, so, like, we're going to add some extra dialogue.
Exactly. So, they didn't go quite that far, so that's why it's not a 10 out of 10. It's only a 9, all right? You know, this is that in Tuscany. But, you can then have another conversation with Sean. It just lets you yap three to Sean conversations? For a while.
Holy cow.
Where you can basically ask about how Sean became an assassin. To which Sean, once again, he's just a snotty guy. Not quite as snotty as the beginning of the game, but still pretty snotty. And so, you know, he's like, bitch. You know, most of you guys are all born into the Brotherhood. Like, I didn't. Like, I figured it out. Because he basically says he was a little hacker man. And, you know, figured out that Abstergo was up to no good. And then basically got noticed by everybody because of it. And so Rebecca was the first person to notice him. And then, you know, it wasn't too long after that before the Templars did as well. So he was basically forced to join the Assassins or just be on the run by himself for the rest of his life. And so, you know, he didn't really have any issue with joining the Assassins. But it's not like he really had any other choice in the matter. Other, like... good, genuinely good choice. And so he got roped into the Assassins trying to, because he essentially tried to do some like cyber warrior justice shit, like trying to, like, you know, post on forums, get people like trying to figure out like, hey, Abstergo's like up to some shenanigans. And that got the attention of a bunch of people, some good, some very not good. Oof. And so that is kind of how he became, you know, Estergo's, like, data analyst and everything. And so, yeah.
You're freaking butthole.
But those are the side conversations you can have with Sean. It's completely optional, completely missable, because Luke's didn't have those conversations.
Yeah, you can't get him on the way back, which, you know, I tried talking to him.
Yeah. Nope, nothing. But then you can also talk to Rebecca. And so, you know, Rebecca, you know, says you're doing a good job, which essentially prompts Desmond to comment that it's nice working for the good guys. And lo and behold, Sean butts in yet again. He's like, are you sure about that? Are you sure you're working for the good guys? And they get into a whole, like, philosophical discussion about whether or not assassins are good guys, because they're still killing people and taking lives. And Rebecca's like, well, you know, it's for the greater good. And Sean's like, yeah, but you're still choosing to do that. Like, no one's forcing you to be here, but you're still choosing to take a life. And so just get into, like, a deep philosophical conversation about, you know, the act of killing and how that can necessarily be construed as good on what, and, you know, like, looking at, like, necessary evils. You know, obviously, you know, it's just an optional, like, dialogue cutscene, so it's not like it goes super in-depth, but they do have a little debate about it for a bit. And so, like I said, Rebecca claims it's a necessary evil, but Sean states it's a voluntary one nonetheless. And so they kind of leave it at that. But then there's a second conversation with Rebecca. And that is what involves my trivia question this week. And I don't want to give too much away here to make it too easy. But essentially, Desmond asks... asks about the Animus and how it's holding up, to which Rebecca comments on something, prompting Desmond to be like, oh, yes, this is really nice. What is he referring to? Now, it may seem like I'm asking a pretty broad question, but anybody who's listened to that dialogue will know, because it's a very, like, meta reference type thing that I cackled when hearing, and it's really, really funny. And we'll talk about it after the podcast, and then again, I'll say it when we talk about the trivia question next week. But it is super, super hilarious. And so that is the trivia question this week. What is Desmond talking about? What is that second conversation? What does he bring up as a new feature of the Animus in his second conversation, his second optional conversation with Rebecca? See if you can get that one, malarkey. Anyway. So, those are the optional conversations you've got. Heading downstairs, you can then practice Ezio's skills by
parkour,
pressing some buttons. And so, you know, you're essentially, yeah, parkouring around this, like, basically warehouse, enclosed shipyard design in a warehouse. And, you know, Lucy's yapping the whole time, pretty much. And, you know, she takes the blame for Subject 16's death due to negligence and whatnot, you know, like, because she was, like, the engineer with 16, just like she was with Desmond. Yeah. So very similar situation. But, you know, he didn't make it out. You know, he went crazy and everything. And so she harbors a lot of guilt because of that. And, you know, Desmond tries to do his little cavalier, like, it's not your fault. You didn't know. You could only do... You were just as much a prisoner as I was. I don't buy that, though. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, yes and no. Like,
and then he starts tripping.
She's got an ID. Like, she can do whatever she wants in Abstergo, pretty much. So, like, I don't really think it was the exact same bow. I don't agree with Desmond there, but I get the sentiment. But, yeah, so yeah, he tries to reassure her, and then she, you know, walks off and she's like, good night. And yeah, as he heads back to his room, all of a sudden he starts, you know, blending between realities, which
is already kind of happening when you're in the warehouse a little bit.
Right, yeah, he'll get you're little seeing, things.
Like, horses, and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, and essentially Lucy's just like, eh, if it's not longer than 30 seconds, then no big deal.
Yeah.
Until this one, which is most definitely longer than 30 seconds.
Yeah, and then they don't act like it's no big deal afterwards. But yeah, this one's really cool.
And so, yeah, essentially, like, Desmond just has a dream of Altair in Acre.
Your boy.
Yeah, so you get to play as Ocker, which it's 100% the same assets from 2007. Do you know where you're at in Ocker? Because I do.
I wasn't paying that much. I mean, not that.
Well, you went because you're chasing this woman, right? Yeah. Like, it's this target. And as you're chasing her, she gets to the like corner of Ocker where you're on that like corner roof where it does like the 90-degree angle. That's right where we had to kill a target, remember? The one commander of the armies, and they're all like they all corral in there. Yeah. And they have all the archers there. Exactly where you're at. I was like, I know exactly where this is. And so
so you gotta catch this girl.
Yeah.
The Templar crossed on her.
Yeah. But they 100% just ripped the assets from the first game, I'm not surprised. I mean, no shame to them. Yeah. Oh yeah, they definitely touched them up. They were definitely, you know, they added some textures to them and whatnot, because it was a good looking game, especially like playing on, you know, the Assassin's Creed Ezio collection. You know, obviously it's touched up a little bit, which. The character models don't look great in that remaster. Like, that's what everybody, like, always gives shit about, because it's just everything's been smoothed over, so it just doesn't look great. But the Assassin's Creed 1 sequence looks great. It looks great with the remaster. You know, just seeing it in, like, I think it's 1080. I don't think they actually did 4K on Xbox. They did on PlayStation, because the PS4 Pro was out by that point. But I do think Xbox is just an upscaled 1080. But, hey, it looks great in 1080, I'll tell you what. Especially with that kind of like bluish tint to it that they have. It's a nice little throwback. But yeah, you're chasing after this woman who turns out to be the Templar Maria. Which, do you remember who Maria is?
Is that the chick you save? Or spare?
Yeah, it's the chick you spare in the first game.
But spare.
Yeah, for the one who was impersonating Roberto Sal.
Yeah,
there towards the end of the game.
Yeah, yep. And she was all like, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
She got mad at you.
Yeah. So that was...
Then you banged.
Yeah, he impregnates her.
Yeah, and then you become her. Well, not really become her.
You become her embryo. Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, you start going into the baby. So, and that's where you wake up, because you start tripping walking back to your room, but all of a sudden you're in your bed, you know, sleeping. So you just kind of like,
yeah. And then they're just like, ah, you're awake now, sleepyhead.
Well, Rebecca wakes you up and is like, hey, tired to wake you, but it's time to get going.
Yeah. And I just want to know, you went from being in a hallway and like passing out to like in your bed. Like, how'd you get there? And how is nobody like, what the fuck happened to Desmond? They're like, ah, he's just sleepy. And they just carried him to his bed. Like, what the hell?
Well, I don't know. I'm taking it under the assumption that bro was just exhausted from the day, that he just started like slipping into a dream state, and then it was sort of like a sleepwalk situation.
And he just walked himself to bed?
Yeah. And or at least that's what I think Desmond believes happened, and that's why he doesn't really say anything to anybody, because he was like, oh, I just had like a crazy ass dream that, you know, is probably something to do with the Animus, but hey, at least it's not like, you know, during my waking hours or whatever, you know, one time thing. Cool. Just kind of like writes it off.
Just goes womp.
What's it? Womp, womp. But, you know, so he brushes off the dream and prepares to head back into the Animus. But before that, you can have a conversation with Lucy.
Yeah.
Which you actually got to have that one.
I did.
Woo-woo. And so, you know, he checks in on Lucy, and she's basically like, says that
they lost. I'm fine. And then, you know, she obviously wasn't fine.
Yeah. And she talks about losing 2 more teams the night before, 8 more assassins dead.
So many assassins.
Yeah, and starts, you know, beginning to panic. And so, again, Desmond's just like, calm down, baby girl.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah, Lucy was pretty hopeless.
Yeah, so she's a little on edge, she's a little antsy, and you then won't talk about it after that. That's it. That's all you get from her. It's where she pulls the, you know, like, shouldn't you be getting to bed type shit from the first game. And so it's time to get in the Animus. And
you get in there.
Yeah, we get back into it. Back in Venice in 1481. And so, arriving in Venice, there is, you know, once you get to Venice, I pretty much beelined it over to the Templar hideout. But like I said, we're going to wait until we both get through that side mission. So
yeah, I went... Ooh, sorry. When I went there, the first thing I did was went back to the villa.
Oh, yeah?
And collect my money, because I was like, hey, your money's full. I was like, ah, shit. So I went there, I upgraded all my shit again, and I'm like two buildings away from having everything that you could buy from the building guy.
Oh, damn. See, I barely put shit into the villa because I haven't been back, so it's like my thing's been full.
Now my thing is like 27,000 it can hold.
Damn. I think mine's somewhere around like 10K. Because I've been buying a lot of the stuff in the shops and whatnot. I've got pretty much everything maxed out in the shops. There's a few armor pieces that I need, and I think I have one more weapon I can get. There's like one that was like 20K that I didn't have the money for, because I am a broke boy now. I've been spending, you know, things are getting pretty expensive, and so I don't exactly like, I make money really expensive. Quickly.
Yeah, I've been noticing that. I was like, man, I'm running out of money quick as shit this sequence.
I wasn't making money quick as shit, though, because if you've noticed, they treasure is
worth a lot.
Yeah, it's more valuable like 900 now. 900
for some of them. I was like, damn.
Well, yeah, like it's because instead of it being like 100 for the red boxes and 500 for the gold, it's now 500 for the red boxes and 1,000 for the gold.
Bro, I did not even know they're different colored boxes.
Well, you're also colorblind, so.
Yeah, but that just kind of annoys me.
But yeah, like,
there's two boxes.
Yeah, there's two different kinds of treasure boxes. There's the red ones, which are the standard, and then there's the gold, which if you see those, you know that they're worth more.
I just was like, box.
Yeah, there's two types of treasure boxes.
That's good to know. So if you're colorblind and you didn't know, now you know.
Yeah, there's two types. But yeah, they are worth more over in Venice, because which makes sense. They're a little more Gucci. They got their Prada over there. You know, that's where shit, what's the fucking family called? It's the richest people in the world right now. It's Arnold. It's fucking, or no, not Versace. Maybe it is Versace. I don't know. Whatever the fucking biggest clothing brand in the world is right now. But, yeah, so you arrive in Venice, and a man named Alvis, I don't know, I can't read my handwriting right now.
Yeah, it's Alvis.
Yeah, Alvis offers to lead Leonardo to his new studio, taking the two on a quick tour of Venice.
Hell yeah.
Where you notice that things aren't exactly super great over there. Some
corruption.
Yeah, Ezio learns of Emilio, a man trying to essentially monopolize the marketplace of Venice by force. And so, just, you know, kind of strong-arming a lot of vendors out of the marketplace. And just
yeah, you watch the journey of this one vendor.
Yeah, basically, yeah. There's a, you know, this, like, the guards basically, like,
give me money. Well, they're like, shop. I paid you. And they're like, well, you can't be here anyways, I don't care. And they break his shit and cut his fish up with a sword.
Yeah, no more fish. And so, like, she had later, you know, try to, like, go up to Emilio's place and be like, you know, I need compensation. And they're they're like, no. And he's like, fine, I'll report you. And they're like, no, you're not. And they drag him inside.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty blatant corruption going on in Venice, of which, you know, the tour guide is basically like, man, these idiots, you know, over here thinking they can do this type of stuff. Like, I can't wait for Emilio to bring order to this city. What a shill. What an absolute bozo. What an idiot.
What an idiot.
But, you know, so you get this little, like, quick tour of Venice, like, showing off some of the landmarks and whatnot. But more so really just setting up, like, hey, there's not great things going on in this town right now. Essentially, Ezio's next step is to try and seek an audience with Emilio, but when he tries, the place is attacked by some thieves, and that's when he meets Rosa.
Rosa, she's kind of cute. Well, we kind of already had him bumping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you're talking about, like, when you're going with the tour guide, you get bumped into by this certain woman.
Yeah, she looks at you like,
I was surprised. I thought I got pickpocketed.
I thought I did too. He like checked his like thing, and I thought he was checking it because he got stolen from. But I think it was like, oh, it's there.
Right. Yeah. But so they essentially try like assaulting Emilio's fortress, but it doesn't work. They get shot down by archers, and Rosa takes one to the leg. She took an arrow to the knee, if you will, and So then all of a sudden, you know, Ezio, like, loving women in distress, so he's got to help this woman, like, you know, escape.
I got you, babe.
Yeah, exactly. So you just lead her through Venice, doing all this stuff, trying to protect her.
Chopping people and...
Yeah, exactly. And then you start, you know, take her, that's where you meet Ugo, who's another one of the thieves who puts her on a boat, and then you have to kind of, like, scout ahead and take out all the archers.
That's actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
You get to, like, do some parkour and, like... I just kind of assassinated, like, psa.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I just came blazing at him. And so, you know, you're essentially just, you know, frolicking through Venice with these thieves.
Yeah, just stabbing people.
Yeah. And so eventually, you know, you get them back to their hideout where you meet Antonio, which is the leader of this Venetian rebellion. All these thieves who are trying to talk, which the tour guide did mention that there was like a little growing resistance, but didn't really like think much of them, just saying they're a bunch of hooligans, essentially. Well, we're meeting the hooligans now. Who, you know, they agree, like, they're like, oh, you know, our motives might not be the same, but we have a common goal. And Ezio's like, fuck yeah, I'm in.
Like, yeah, I was like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been in Venice for all of, what, like, 20 minutes, and we've already, like, made allies with the
We found the most resistance. The most popular group, or resistance group in the country.
Yeah. Because they also know us. They're like,
yeah, we know, like, you. We know you. Yeah, you know. You've done some shit, bro.
And yeah. Like, so your work in you know, in Firenze is, you know.
What do you call it? He called it some shit. He said our work was unrefined, which I thought was kind of annoying. He was calling us, like, he was kind of saying, it's like, no. It's like, we were good.
I mean, to be fair, we like...
The first one, maybe.
Yeah, like, Ezio is a bit of a brute, you know? He doesn't have a whole lot of flair or nuance right off of the bat. You know, he's kind of, like, developing that.
He's not a very
that.
Assassin-y assassin. Like, even, yeah. like, his assassinations are, like... He kills flashy. A lot of people. Yeah, he's like, I'm here. Ah.
Yeah, exactly.
He like, says a prayer.
But I will tell you, that smoke bomb works wonders.
Smoke bomb does work wonders.
But, so yeah, he agrees to work with them, and then you're opened up to a bunch of missions, because they basically are like, you know, we can't just storm it again, because they're going to be, you know, increasing defenses, we're going to have a well-thought-out plan, we, you know, we've got to recover, do all this stuff. And so you're opened up with a bunch of missions, which I paid attention to kind of, you know, the official order of them. And, you know, canonically speaking, the very first one is with Ugo, who tells Ezio about captured thieves that Emilio is planning to execute. So Ezio goes to free them, which I had a lot of fun with that, because, you know, essentially, you know, it was like that was the one you go in like three separate areas of like restricted areas.
Yeah. And you have to kill the corrupt thieves, right?
No. That's the one where you're freeing the ones that were imprisoned.
That was the first one you're supposed to do?
Again, you can do them in any
order.
Well,
I know, but that was like the first one mechanically. I feel like,
think about it. I mean,
I feel like the first one should be Rosa teaching you how to climb that shit, because it's literally right there.
True. But it's not. Yeah. That wasn't. I don't know. It's just not the game's fucking order, man. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just judging it.
But. I don't know how you approached it, but every time I did, I just got up on the roofs and then, like, just air assassinated the guards that were in front of the thing, which always aggroed one of the groups guarding the outside. Not both, you'd think, because it's pretty much directly in the middle all the time, and so you'd think it would aggro everybody, but it would only aggro one of the groups, which was nice, because then I would just take that exit, and I'd just ignore the other one to get them out, so then I didn't have to worry about aggroing anybody else.
See, I just, you know, in classic brute, I just kind of went down there, I walked towards the entrance, and I went, and I killed two of them, and I started fighting them, and I just killed them all, so that I could just walk any way I wanted.
The absolute, like, just surge of dopamine I get when I walk up, double assassinate one, and then in, like, get this huge group, and then do another double assassination directly after, get another. Like, I've been able to assassinate, like, six people in a row before, and then, like, have the last one run off, and, like, it's so cool just being able to chain that together.
Well, and I love using the hidden blades, too, just as, like, a weapon, because, like, if you get counters off and you kill people, the guards get scared.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed that. Like, yeah. The guards will run away way more frequently than they do with other weapons.
Which I actually did utilize the blades a lot more this time.
I utilized them a lot this time. I was trying to use my dagger more, but honestly, a dagger is weak as shit. Maybe I just have a shitty dagger. I tried buying a better one.
Yeah, you probably should. But it takes
a lot of hits.
Because I have a butcher knife. I have the best one in the game.
Maybe I should buy the butcher knife then. Because I bought like a different one. It was because I thought it looked cool. It had like, it was like a squiggly line looking thing.
I think I know which one you're talking about. But,
But, yeah, it took me forever to fucking whack people with it. So I started using my blades and sword again.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's like a mid, you know, like the assassin's blade, you know, the counter time's really, you know, like quick and everything like that, and it doesn't do a whole lot of damage, but then, you know, successful counters are really powerful.
Well, yeah, you can even counter the knights with assassin's blade.
Yeah, you can counter everybody except the brutes, obviously.
No, you can.
Even the brutes?
The big one with the big guy's armor?
Yeah.
Yeah, you like will come up close and you'll stab them up in the neck through their armor right here.
Oh yeah, I guess like a finisher or whatever, but I don't.
I did that for a counter because like he came at me and I hit the wrong one because I was trying to dodge, but I countered and I just like went, I was like, oh, maybe you have to get him to a certain health. I wonder if you get him to a certain health.
That could definitely be.
I know because like when they get down to like two, they're like kind of start wobbling.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. I'm not 100% sure on that. But, you know, so then, like, your knife is essentially kind of like an in-the-middle thing. Because it's quicker, obviously, than the sword. So you can get off a lot more. And I like the flow of the dagger a lot.
The flow is so fun.
Yeah. I think it's the most fun weapon of the three. Because, again, you've got the speed of the assassin's blade while not quite as quick. But then it's a lot more versatile. And so there is a wide variety of enemies in Venice. Because I think, you know, for Lee, I didn't really use the Assassin's Blades mostly because a lot of the people had, pretty much most of them had armor to where, like, it was kind of annoying to use the blades. So I didn't use it. Whereas, like, there is a pretty wide variety of guards in Venice to where it still felt like my blades could actually do some damage because there were a fair bit of guards without, you know, like metal armor that I could do that with. And even with metal armor, you know, to a certain extent, like the blades, yeah, they chop through pretty much anybody.
I love that. I love the counter.
Yeah.
With the blades. It feels good.
Oh yeah. 100%. Just like mowing through fools. But yeah, I definitely had a lot of fun messing around with the blades a lot more this sequence than I have in the past. But, I did actually. Did you end up losing any of the prisoners you freed?
Nah.
I lost one because he fucking drowned. He just fell in the water. Yeah, he killed himself. So that was fun.
A W hit. I just took a bridge. I just walked the whole way there.
See, I was like, oh, shiny thing. So I went and collected it real quick. And then also, I spent so much fucking unnecessary money accidentally hiring people when I would tell them to stay. Because it's the same button to hire somebody as it is to tell your group to stay. So I would be unknowingly close to a group. And so I would hire them. And so I literally spent like 450 florins. Like, I hired like three or four different groups just doing that over and over. And it pissed me off. Like, I was like, if this happens one more fucking time, I swear to God. So I wasted a shit ton of money on this mission. Just accidentally hiring new groups. I hired like two different thieves groups and like one group of prostitutes. And I was like, fucking hell, man. And so that was a thing that happened a few times. And then basically, you know, after you free those, he tells you to meet him on the docks where he's got, you know, a next mission, which is where he asks you to rob a shipment of Emilio's guards' armor that they're essentially going to use to impersonate the archers so that they don't have to worry about that again. And then steal a boat and bring it to him. So it's all part of, like, setting up their next plan.
A lot of... like three-part missions here.
Yeah, exactly. Which this one's kind of similarly set up where it's like you're not going to restricted areas, but you're going to, like, you know, rob these like treasure chests that are guarded, and so you usually gotta kill a few people, grab that, and then you're headed into a pretty large restricted area to steal that boat. Which I didn't even really worry about stealth that time, to be honest with you, because I think there was snagging a chest nearby, and then I took a poster off, and I was like, the poster was directly in the restricted, and I was like, I'm literally gonna get noticed immediately, but I don't care, fuck it, whatever. So I just ripped it in front of them, pissed them off even more. And then they're just like, yeah, fuck you. And I was like, man, fuck you. And I killed all of them.
I think that's what I did. I mean, I didn't rip the poster, but I just went up and killed them all, and I took the boat.
Yeah.
Because I felt like it was easiest. There was the one where you could just jump in the water behind the guards and just steal the chest. That was my favorite one because it was just, like, sneaky.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought about it. I saw that one, and I was like, I could definitely do this, but I'd done a lot of running around prior, and I was like, I don't really want to go all the way around just to, like, be a little sneaky guy, so fuck it. Let me just... Okay. But I did see that.
I just happened to be coming from that way, so
right. It
was convenient.
Yeah, I was on the opposite end, so I was just like, I'm good. But, so that's kind of, like, Ugo's little set of missions that you can do there. Meanwhile, going to Antonio... Antonio tells Ezio of traitors in their midst. This is the one you were talking about.
Yeah, that's one.
So, you know, Ezio's got to identify and kill them, which this is, I believe, the first time officially in the game that you get to check out those little quasi-pirate ships. Not actual pirate ships, but, you know, those little ships.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think, because this isn't the first time I've assassinated somebody like that, but I think the other time was an assassination mission. It was a side mission.
Okay.
So I think this is the first time you can, like, officially do it. But I just like how the ships are designed, and they're really
fun. Yeah, they're pretty cool.
So I almost got caught on, like, specifically for that ship one, but I just climbed on top of the ship, because they were like, what are you doing here? And I was like, don't worry about it. And just, like, kept climbing up so then I could do a big old air assassination.
Oh, I got caught on that one. I just assassinated. I just, like, got in a fight with them and stabbed them.
Yeah, I was about to do that. I was like, nah, I want my air assassination. I want a bit of coup. That's exactly what I did. But, there's a couple others that are just, like, strolling around, you know, on the rooftop and then walking around, which I that one that was walking in that little, like, marketplace, I just, like, double assassinated.
Oh, that's
them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was laying around. Yeah. I was like, boop.
Yeah,
like,
and then I walked away.
Yeah.
That was easy.
Exactly. So, you know, disposing of some traitors. Fuck them. And then finally, you go up to Rosa, where she's got a couple missions for you.
She's a cripple.
Yeah, so he asks her to teach him the climb leap technique because he sees her scale this pretty well, which, you know, I'm surprised she doesn't give him as much shit as she does, basically being like, hey, teach me this intricate climbing technique while she's literally crippled.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, I can't now. That was basically all she said.
Literally. Like, well, you know, a little under the weather right now, as you know, like I took an arrow to the fucking leg, but, you know, I'll show you a Franco. So, you know, you learn the climb leap ability, which I was trying to get this viewpoint.
Dude, exact same fucking thing. I was like, there's gotta be a mechanic we learned. I was like, that was literally my last thing I did. I was like, I cannot figure this out. I was like, I'm missing something. I haven't learned something yet.
Well, I looked it up because I'm like, there's no fucking way. And then they were like, dude, calm down, bro. You're not far enough yet. And I was like, damn it. I was like, I want it now. Because that's, like, you know, that's right where the Templar hideout is. So then I thought, well, maybe you have to finish the Templar hideout to do it. So I did that and finished it. And then I came out and it was not there. And I was like, damn it. What the fuck? But it literally is, like, part of the next mission because Rosa then challenges Ezio to climb the tower using the climb leap.
Which I was so happy when I learned the climb leap that I went and did that waypoint just to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I went and did it, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this.
No, I saw where it was, and I was like, I think I'm just going to climb this bitch again.
Yeah, but I was like, whatever. I was like, I'll learn the route, so then I can do it really quickly, and that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
You know, it gave you the 5 minutes, but I was just like,
yeah, I was like, still 4 minutes, 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and so, but, yeah, climb leap is great. It makes, you know, because again, beautiful. Like the... You know, the platforming is, you know, the climbing is like, just a lot faster than the first game, and you know, everything's great, which, actually, I wanted to bring up. Did you pay attention to the fact that Altair is still slower in that dream sequence?
Yeah.
Like, they still have the old mechanics? I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because then it helps, like, differentiate the assassins, where, like, Ezio is just a naturally stronger climber than Altair. So it wasn't just like a, hey, this is a thing we're improving. Like they stuck to the whole, like, you know, these are different aspects of the different assassins, which I really liked.
Oh yeah.
Little side note real quick, but you know, again, like you scale up a lot faster. They definitely improved the climbing in the game.
And to be honest, I remember that jumping technique so much because apparently I used it so much that, like, I just thought it was part of the game. And then when it wasn't, I was just like, oh, maybe it's not in this game. I thought, cause like,
right. Yeah, I it's definitely cool just because then, you know, it makes just, yeah, traversing around a lot easier. So nice. You can then, you know.
You can not have to crawl around the entire opposite side just to make this one crawl climb.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely helps, you know, traversal streamline a little bit more. It's just sick. And so with that, you know, you've gained a lot of skills. And this, you know, this all takes place over another 4 years.
Yeah.
Which, they do break the canon, technically, because I checked the DNA, and it is. Like, these missions take place over 4 years. But then, during the actual assassination mission, they claim that he's only been in Venice for a few weeks, when it's actually been 4 years. So, Ubisoft, you fucked up there.
They did fuck up.
You fucked up.
Continuity error.
Yep, there's a continuity error in your fucking game, because it says very specifically in the DNA that this is that, you know, those missions took place from 1481 to 1485, and that the assassination takes place in 1485. So 4 years after he arrived in Venice.
And what makes that funny is, like, are we on that mission?
We're pretty much there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because he makes a comment about, like, how he's like, the assassin, is he here?
Yeah.
And then, like, if it's been 5 years and he didn't know, I think that's even funnier than
this. Yeah, exactly.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So they do kind of break that a little bit, which I think they definitely, like, didn't put too much, like, thought into, like, the timeline as they were making it. And I feel like that was one of the things they added later, was kind of, like, figuring out, okay, what's the exact time frame here? And so I think it was one of those things that just kind of, like, got missed. But
happens,
know, yeah.
Bad but, game,
yeah. Dog shit. Honestly, I don't even know why we have this stupid podcast. it's just fucking doo doo ass game. But yeah. So essentially, you know, you've got the plan in place over the last 4 years, and so, you know, Ezio works with Antonio and his thieves too. Get rid of him once and for all.
Yeah, you get all that stuff you stole and you put it to use.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you go around taking out archers, replacing them with, you know, Antonio's men. And then, you know, head into the fortress where Emilio is having a meeting with Carlo, who Antonio reveals is a member of the Council of Ten. And so, you know, kind of like a getting more into, like, the politics of Venice and the overarching, you know, political climate of Italy. But, you know, you get to the fortress, you have to get rid of Emilio within a certain time frame before, because he's getting ready to leave, which I was worried because...
I didn't even see the time frame.
There wasn't a timer, but the objective was to kill him before he left. So, but, like, it had him very close to the exit pretty much immediately, so I got really worried.
Oh, I got nervous. Yeah, saw that.
And so, like, because I was up on the roof, like, you know, trying to, like,
that's where I was.
And so then I just dropped down basically directly in front of him, popped a smoke bomb, and then just gunned it. It was like, fuck you! And so...
I took a gamble, and I was like, they wouldn't make him leave right now. If he said, like, if it was like we had to get him before he left, so if you pay attention, he eventually walks back up to grab stuff from his, like, room,
yeah,
or whatever. But I just dropped down from the top, killed one dude, and then he saw me, so I just, like, sprinted at him, and I had to, like, knock some guards over because they were coming at me, and I just went stab.
Hell yeah. And so, you know, like, that's pretty much over with, and, you know, Antonio takes out, like, the rest of the guards,
yeah,
so you don't have to worry about making, like, a mad dash.
And then, you know, they shoot one at you because they're just having fun.
Yeah. And Antonio's basically like, yeah, anything you want. And it feels like, you know, some money would be nice.
Like, I like money.
So, you know, he plops that in your lap, so that's pretty sweet. And that's where, like I said, he talks about Carlo, who, you know, Ezio is now plotting as his next target. Is there, you know, planning a meeting? So he's going to figure out where this goes next. His quest never stops. His blade always thirsts for blood. And so that's the end of sequence 7. Like I said, a pretty lengthy one. The actual sequence itself is, I think, pretty standard. But then, you know, with that present day sequence, quasi sequence in between. You know, we have a lot of stuff. There's a lot of like really cool like story moments in here, you know, meeting Antonio and Rosa, as well as
you're learning new game mechanics too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, still getting new game mechanics. Seven Secrets. Again, we would be done with the first game by now. Mm-hmm. And we still got another, you know, 50% of the game to get through. Which is pretty crazy.
We got to see our boy Altair again.
Exactly. Something like, I completely forgot about. Like, yeah,
Don't even remember it. Like, that's how... And I definitely played through this game. So it's like...
But, yeah, it's a super fun time. And there's just... The way that this game continues to, like I said, like, just innovate and evolve what's came before. And continue, like, tying back. I think one of the things I do appreciate about this game so much is... As much as it is superior to the first in pretty much every aspect, it never tries to erase it. And it keeps trying to, like, build off of it rather than replace it. And so, you know, just, like, showing that reverence to the first title while still just making it pretty insignificant by its own merits is, you know, it's great. And I wish Ubisoft stuck with that throughout the franchise, you know. I keep seeing, you know, I keep playing this game and being amazed by it and wowed and just being like, man, those future games really aren't quite as great as, you know, they you know, the you know, this really got to be, you know, this is some peak Assassin's Creed shit right here.
They worked their asses off for those games, and you can really feel it on almost every level of the game. Like, they didn't slack really anywhere.
No, they really didn't.
They kicked corners.
Yeah, and especially, like, compared to the first game, you know, you had your, like, three cities in the mountain area, and, you know, that you can tell that a lot of assets were kind of, like, cut and pasted, but, you know, a lot of the ground, you know, a lot of it was foundational groundwork, you know, but, like, here in, you know, in Italy, you know, there's so many, like, sprawling city, like, again, we're up to four now. Yeah, and you know, we're still not done yet.
Intricately, like, all laid out. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you know, we're not going to talk about Tuscany, but, like, you know, three out of four ain't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, Tuscany was not great.
Yeah.
Fucking Archers, stupid assholes.
Stupid fucking town. But, you know, anyway. But, yeah, I'm still having a lot of fun with this game. How are you feeling? You know, we're halfway through now. What are your thoughts?
I don't remember things getting so expensive. I don't remember, like, armor being, like, $17,000 or whatever bullshit it was.
Yeah, it's up to around like 20 now. But
no, I'm having a great time as always. I miss I want to do some more of the side quests that I missed. I'll probably do some of those for next episode.
Maybe, I don't know. You always leave it for the last minute, so
I plan on playing on Friday, and that's
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll
see. But this has been another episode of Resync and Assassin's Creed Podcast. Next week, we will cover Sequence 8 going into the back half of the game. The stakes will get higher. Hell, things will get more challenging. You know, more things to explore and stuff like that. You know, I didn't actually do any assassination missions, so I'll probably get into that next sequence. Like I said, I only did that one side mission, so it was a little streamlined this time, but I feel like I'll have a lot of frolicking to do next sequence in Venice, now that it's kind of opened up more proper. But, you know, appreciate you guys, and real quick before we go, I did want to mention we got some Shadows news. They did a progression deep dive, actually, talking about how the progression works. And they finally confirmed something, which I was pretty eager to learn about, which is the fact that progression is shared between the protagonists. So as you earn XP for Nahue, you will also earn it for Yasuke as well, and that's vice versa. So it's not like you're going to fall characters. Behind. Yeah, you're not grinding two characters. It is shared, which, yeah, I'm very appreciative of. I'm, you know, super happy that that doesn't happen. They also talk about I'd seen recently that I believe the canon mode, which is what I plan on playing, like, for my first playthrough, because I'm just curious to see how that goes. I believe in the missions, they do select the character for you, instead of letting you choose. They said, because they very specifically said that you can still switch characters in the open world. So that kind of, you know, insinuates that you won't be able to during missions, which I'm actually okay with. You know, obviously, yeah. You know, you still have, like, the non-canon mode if you want to switch on the fly. But then that kind of, like, takes that, like, guessing game out of, like, being like, ooh, what did the developers really tailor? Like, which one did they tailor this mission for? You know, and that's one of the reasons I'm actually kind of excited for canon mode. I know, like, some people don't really care about that canon mode because it's like, you know, obviously, like, I want to be able to make my choices as an RPG. But again, like, as someone, you know, who's particularly fond of the old action-adventure roots, having that canon mode is really nice. So just it makes me feel nostalgic for that side of Assassin's Creed. And then I feel like it'll present a pretty balanced way of enjoying the game to the fullest extent, you know? So I'm excited to do that and jump into that. But they essentially talked about that there's two different, I guess, ways that progression works. There's mastery, which are just basically like the skill trees, you know, where like, you know, each weapon tree allows you to improve and expand your skills by learning new combos, increasing weapon efficiency, or unlocking deadly abilities. So, you know, you can like basically increase your assassination stuff where you can start assassinating, like one-shotting like random, you know, like increasingly, you know, difficult enemies as you put points into it and whatnot. But also there is an option to just make everybody able to be assassinated with one shot, which I think is kind of cool. You can just like assassinate bosses if you want to, like it's an accessibility setting, where it's like, you know, if you're stealthy enough, go for it. Which I think is kind of cool. I don't know. It probably, I feel like it would feel a little cheap if I were to do that.
You can't even do that in the early games.
Yeah, exactly. But you can technically turn it on. It's a cool little cognitive accessibility feature they have there. But then there's also the knowledge system where, you know, you earn mastery points that you can invest, but you do need a certain level of knowledge to access certain skills. So it's not like everything in the mastery skill tree is available to you at the start. You have to have a certain tier of knowledge to access like a certain set of mastery skills, and then you get more knowledge, and you get knowledge. And so you earn, you know, knowledge points by essentially just like, you know, progressing through the game. And so, but yeah, all, you know, your level, XP, mastery points, and knowledge are gained by both people equally, so neither character is left behind. But yeah, trying to make sure there's nothing that I'm forgetting. They did tease a little bit about endgame stuff, because they said once you reach the sixth rank of knowledge, you will have all skills available to unlocking your mastery trees, but you then gain access to a brand new knowledge tree and continue progressing, offering numerous new passive skills, allowing you to maximize certain stats. I'm imagining this is going to be similar to, like, the Marvel Avengers system, not to bring up that game, but, like, where you essentially have all of your skills, and then it's going to be a bunch of, like, percentage increases where it's, like, you know, like, this melee attack does, you know, 2% damage, which you can upgrade to 4% and 6% and so on and so forth. Yeah, I imagine it's going to be stuff like that, like, stat stuff. Faster. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, different stat-based stuff. And so... Let's see. Anything else that I know here? I'm just making sure I'm not forgetting about anything. A lot of stuff that's returning from the past RPGs where, you know, your gear quality, you've got, like, common to legendary, you know, legendary equipment's going to be available only in certain places and what's not. They've got a transmog system, so you can do that.
Hell yeah.
They've got perks, which, you know, can be, like, straightforward stat improvements. They can influence afflictions, which that is another thing they talked about, where it's, like, basically, which I'm trying to think. Oh, yeah. So there are four types of afflictions that you can do in the game, where you can make enemies bleed, you can poison them, you can daze them, which a lot of times has to do with Yasuke's attacks, and then you can knock them out. Where they just stay down on the ground for a certain amount of time. Another one that's usually from Yasuke, where it's usually like when an enemy's grabbed and then KO'd. But yeah, you can use different, you know, perks to help with those afflictions. And then one thing I saw is they actually started, like, going into a stealth build for Yasuke, where it is pretty, like, range-focused. But that got me excited because, again, that's kind of, like, my big thing is, like, I want to be stealthy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and so, like, the whole thing about the separation between Yasuke and Nawe, where Yasuke seems to be the non-stealth focus and Nawe seems to be, you know, the stealth focus, but then you can't really have the best of both worlds with either of them. But then it seems like you kind of can with Nawe, because, yeah, she doesn't, she, you know, she can't take as many hits, but, like, she does have, like, a ton of different weapons she can use. So
the combat seems pretty cool.
Yeah, it does feel like I'll want to spend the majority of my time as Nawe versus Yasuke. But, you know, they did talk about, like, with a bow, that there's some pretty sick, you know, stealth builds that you can
stealth make archer.
With that archer. Pretty much, yeah. You literally can be, like, a stealth archer. So, yeah, it's pretty sick. But... And then there's also, yeah, like, you can create, like, specific builds where you have, like, you're buffed at nighttime and things like that. And just, yeah, it seems like there's some really cool customization options that you can do there. But, yeah, super cool stuff. So, again, oh, yeah. We are less than a month away from Shadows. I'm super excited. Also want to give, a quick little, like, promo that I am going to be streaming the game over on my Twitch at Pandamaster Twitch. When the game comes out, I'm starting stream at 11:30 the night before, 11:30 Eastern, and going to be playing the game right at release for 24 hours straight. I'm doing a 24-hour live stream, and then I'm going to sleep for a little while and be back for another 12, and then I'll sleep for a little bit and do another set. Like, I'm literally going to put in, like, 42 hours within the first few days of the game because I'm just, yeah, I'm all in it. I'm super excited. You know, it's one of my most anticipated games of the year, and I know, you know, if I don't get through it quickly, then it's just not going to get done because that's how I am with video games.
And it's, you know, kind of an RPG. And
yeah, you know, it's a huge RPG that's probably going to take a long time. You know, they basically said – I don't think they – really talked about how long the game is yet, but they, you know, pretty early on had said they weren't trying to make another Valhalla because there were a lot of complaints that Valhalla was too big. So I'm curious where this one kind of lands, but I'm sure it's going to take at least that much, you know, and I'm not going for 100%. I'm going to save that for when we get to it in the podcast, but, you know, I do want to roll credits here so then we can have a bonus plus episode talking about it at some point. And so, yeah, but I'm going to be streaming it a lot, so if you guys aren't planning on getting the game, you know, right at launch and you're curious to see, or if you just, you know, want to see how other people are playing the game, I'll be streaming that over on my Twitch, and so I've got the schedule out now for you guys to look and see what it is in your time zone over on my Twitch, so go check that out if you haven't already. But, yeah, we're almost there. It's super fun, but... We'll get out of here. We were kind of, like I said, I almost forgot about that Shadows news. I wanted to drop over there. There's also some really cool collaborations that they've been dropping, like, leading into it. We have what?
We have gone over time.
Yeah. Fuck you, that's why. Yeah, he wants to go get drunk with his friends, but I got shit to talk about. There's really cool phone covers. We're almost done. But he's getting antsy. But... they came out with really cool phone covers with Rhino Shield. I'm really mad, though, because they don't have my phone. It's just basically, like, the newest of all the phones, like the Samsung, Apple, Google. So, fuck me, I guess. But they also came out with a workout challenge that I really want to get into. I just need to get a jump rope for. It's a 5-week challenge that uses different, like, aspects of, like, the different eras of assassins, where they have the first week is assassin training, week 2 is pirate training, week 3 is Spartan training, week 4 is Viking training, and week 5 is samurai/shinobi training. And they actually, like, had, like, a, you know, a fitness trainer, like, come up with stuff that was inspired by these different backgrounds, and it looks really cool, so I'm actually gonna try that out here, hopefully next week, so I will update you guys, but that is also available on their website and on all their social medias and whatnot. They have, like, they're coming out with TikToks where the guy who made them gives, like, tips and things like that throughout, so it's really cool. I definitely recommend checking that out. And then they did a sponsorship with Focus Fuel, which is exclusively available at GNC, where there's this exclusive flavor of caffeine gummies that unlocks a weapon in the game as well as some in-game currency if you get it. So I'm definitely going to make a trip over there to try to snag some, because that sounds dope. And then something I'm really sad about, because I think you can get it in the U.S., but when I went to the website, it was only available like in like European districts. Like you could go to a British version, which I imagine you could technically get it shipped over to the US, but it's very expensive, so I don't think I'm going to do that. But they came out with this French company came out with some sick PC peripherals for Shadows. There's a gaming mouse and it's two different mouse pads. There's a headset and a stand for it. There's this specific controller, which is kind of an in-between between like the DualShock 4 and the DualSense. It's a bit of a weird design, to be honest, but it does look pretty sick, as well as a keyboard. And there's some really cool PC peripherals. So if you're playing on PC, and I believe all of them come with a copy of the game on PC, and so it's a pretty good value, but it is a little pricey, but it definitely is worth the money because the designs are really sick. But I'm not 100% positive about worldwide availability because they didn't do a whole lot of marketing for it, and it does seem to be kind of like a Europe exclusive thing, but definitely look into that. Anyway, that's it. We're getting over. I appreciate you guys.
Oh yeah.
We will see you guys next week, and remember that nothing is true.
Everything is permitted.
Ta-ta.